Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Well, hello, sir.
Well, hello. I'm going to do a couple of quick housekeeping.
Thanks for coming.
Yes. And clearly your town remembers you.
Yes, yes. Right. I'm still of this town. Yes. I still am a homeowner, and I love it.
Yes. I don't think, actually, before I get to the housekeeping, I don't think I've ever gotten a clapping before I got onto the stage. So
well,
congratulations.
Yes. Right.
So hello, and welcome to today's Commonwealth Club World Affairs Program. My name is Reid Hoffman, partner at Greylock, and I'm delighted to be here. A few notes before we get started, some reminders. If you have any questions for Kara, please fill them out in the cards that were on your seats, or if you're joining us online through the YouTube chat. And now. It's my pleasure to introduce someone who's not only a legend in tech journalism, but, you know, a friend, frequent sparring partner, and the author of a great new book, Burn Book, A Tech Love Story. You know, Kara and I have known each other for more years than either of us
30.
Probably. Look, I was about to say we wouldn't want to say, but clearly one of us is a journalist. She's known for asking tough questions. And among the reasons I was delighted to be here is I get to ask some of the tough
Good.
Questions.
Good. I'm so excited.
That'll be
finally,
fun.
Finally.
Yes. And so, you know, we'll see where this goes. I also think that people should understand you not just as a journalist and a truth teller, but also as an entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Right?
You
know, because you've been innovating within the journalism ecosystem, the tech media ecosystem, and a bunch of things. And I think that's been a real,
sure.
a real contribution. So welcome back
Thank
to
you.
The Commonwealth Club.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
So let's kick it off the way you do in your book. Mm-hmm. As it turned out, it was capitalism after all.
Yes, yes. That was my... You don't have to read anything else. That's really what it's about.
So a great line, mm-hmm. you know, possibly cynical. You know the positive... I actually think of you as actually a tech optimist.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you open your book that way? What caused you to think that way?
Because I... By the way... Is it a Mark Andreessen tech optimist? Because please don't put him in any way, shape, or form. But yes, I am a tech optimist. Not an optimist. No, I'm an optimistic pessimist.
Yes.
I assume the worst, and I'm thrilled when the best happens. But I wrote it in a certain way, so it turns out. Because when I got here, and as you recall, we met, and I think you were one of ones that I actually believed wanted to do good things. Everyone else...
Hopefully it's still present tense.
It is present
okay,
tense. Yes. You're doing a good job right now. But one of the...
that's one of the things I love about Kara. It's like, but I'm keeping attention.
I am paying attention. I really wanted to say, because when I got here, there was this whole idea, and you remember, and we were just reminiscing backstage, there was an ethos here. There was a feeling of newness, of pioneering. It was a new industry being born. And so there was the excitement around that. And of course, you're always very positive during those times. And one of the things that a lot of the tech entrepreneurs did at the time, and some of them meant it, others not so much, were this idea that we're here to save humanity, make things better. It was that Star Trek vision of the universe. And I talk about that there's a Star Trek mentality among certain in tech, when in fact it really is more Star Wars, where things are a little more difficult, that evil tends to prevail, that the heroes are very flawed, and also they don't win a lot. They really don't. If you really take apart Star Wars, and I've interviewed George Lucas about this, it's a dark tale. Star Trek isn't. And so there was a sort of Star Trek-y where the villains turn out to be good and everyone gets along and look, it's so diverse and, you know, there's struggles, but really not. It's a very simplistic idea of humanity. And a good one. And so I was sort of bothered, and I went back and looked at some of my early articles. I was down with this. I wrote a story about the 10 things tech people will tell you that aren't true, including we're here to save the world, including there's no titles here, when in fact there was power, right? You know, oh, I'm Chief Yahoo. And I'm like, and yet, you know, or whatever. And the only person who actually did articulate it honestly was Mark Zuckerberg, which was the I'm the CEO bitch thing, which I was like, thank you. That's correct. You are, and you control everything. Yeah. Although he later would lapse into this. He'd call me. He'd be like, it's all about the community. I'm like, well, why do you control the whole community? And he's like, but it's the community. And I'm like, and yet you can't be fired. So it's not about the community. And you make all the decisions. And so so I really wanted to say, just like Wall Street, insurance, these are, you're just like them. Like, you're not, like, you don't have a Wall Street person coming up to you and saying, what I really want is world peace. They'd say, I want to make money because I like money and I like my house in Connecticut and whatever. And so I wanted to say, look, this was all about money and power. And that's okay if we admit that that's what it's about.
Yeah, although, I mean, part of the reason I wanted to kick off here, mm-hmm. and, you know, I love both your role as the kind of watch person mm-hmm. of the industry and also the asking the hard question, I think is really important. But also, part of the challenge is I don't know of a way to get tech to scale other than by companies.
Right.
And there are places where tech companies actually can have a really good
yes.
positive impact on the
yes,
world.
Sure.
And so it's not necessarily a false, it's not necessarily a dichotomy.
No, but it's the narcissistic tendencies that drive yeah. me crazy. It's the idea that you're at the center of the universe, that this is, you know, someone really smart, Ben Mezrich, has written a book, another book. He wrote the first Facebook mm-hmm. book that became Social Network. He said, you know, he was talking specifically about Elon, but, you know, a lot of these characters think this is a video game and they're Ready Player One. Mm. And I wanted to say, like, look, this isn't, they're not doing this out of the kindness of their heart, even if there might be good outcomes. And one of the reasons there's bad outcomes is because they're pretending and cosplaying that it's something other than it is, which is, we're a construction company, we're building that highway the way we want to do it, or we're doing this. And so I would really like them to admit what they're doing is building companies, which is great, but a lot of it was this touchy-feely idea. And it's not because it was California, not because it was San Francisco. They really did see themselves, because they were steeped in science fiction, they were steeped in game playing. They saw themselves as, like, even Apple, when they put the pirate flag up, mm. I was like, you're not pirates. Give me a break. Like, you're a giant mega corporation. We're pirates. I was like, stop it. Like, or more, which was around, and I think you were not like this, which is why I like you, was, mm-hmm. you know, were toys. There was a lot of toys. There was a lot of primary colors. Yeah. It was a lot like you're in a nursery school, yeah. essentially. And so, you know, we have a pogo stick character. I'm like, good for you. I had one when I was 7, and it's gone, like, now. Or there's a scene in the book with Excite where they had a fake garage door to show their roots.
Yes.
Like, whatever. Yes. It's so ridiculous and performative. And they thought I'd be impressed and put it in the story, which I declined to. Or, and then they had a slide, which they, between the second, remember that, the slide?
Yes.
And they're like, go down the slide. I was like, phew, I'm not going down a slide. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm 30, whatever. I didn't like it when I was 5. I definitely don't like it when I'm 36. Or, you know, even Jeff Bezos with that door. Do you remember the door?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What he would do is he said, and he wanted it in all the stories. Like, that's what was clear. It was all PR, essentially. But he's like, we're saving money here, so everybody works on a door. And I was like, you know, IKEA costs a lot less. I'm sorry. Like, a door. Like, aren't you? And sawhorses. I was like, I don't understand it. And so the performative nature, you know, and when he was doing the I'm sleeping in the factory floor, I'm like, there's a motel next door. Stop it. Like, stop this. And then I began to realize it was cosplaying. It's like, I'm playing a character of this person. And that gets exhausting.
Well, one of the things I think pointing out the incongruities in the story is extremely important. It is also, though, part of that the work is so hard in building these scale companies.
Sure
you
are.
Do need some kind of almost like the funny
story.
Thing is, some kind of story about what we're doing and kind of why that is. And obviously, I think one can do it without certain forms of silliness.
Yes.
But, you know, when you look across them, it's like it's part of the reason why a lot of these huge tech companies, mm-hmm. and they're all built with stories like this.
Right, right. Everybody has one. Everybody has, like, the origin story. And often the DNA of a company, as you know, is like the founder,
yes.
that whatever that origin story is. And there's a lot of reality in it, and about their humanness and their struggle, and the relentlessness comes from their story. At the same time, I was just watching a video of Mark Andreessen talking about, you know, it's really painful. It's really hard. It's so hard. So I'm like, you know how hard it is to like drive a bus, dude? Like, how hard is it to like, do you have a bus driver who goes, it's really hard that I had to get up this morning and I have to feed my kids and I have to do six jobs and it's really hard. You know how hard it is to do what I do? And to hear it from elite people is, yeah. I'm sorry, it's not that different. Everyone's job is hard. And so I get that. But I do think stories do matter. When I covered AOL, their narrative was everybody was a dinosaur. They had a big dinosaur. And Microsoft was particularly aggressive towards AOL. And so Ted Leonsis built an entire narrative around where the little guys beating the dinosaur, the big, and they would have people sign it and they'd cheer. And I get it. It's a team thing. Like we're part of a team, or Netscape did that, or any company point to, you have to have a foe and you have to have, you know, a story and here's why we're doing it. And I get it. It's just that they like to self-aggrandize when other people just have a job, right? Kind of stuff. It has to be the great struggle. And I do get that idea about inspirational things, but I think you're inspired by making great products and not hurting people. That would be my inspiration, for example.
100%. And actually, one of the things that I sometimes take some of my, you know, industry colleagues to task for is they're like, she's beating up on us. Mm-hmm. And it's like, cry me a river from where you
thank
are.
Thank you for that. Right. Yeah, she's beating up on us.
Yes.
It's you like, know, in some ways, one, I'm not their friend. I'm not. I know I'm friendly.
Yes.
And I think people are surprised how friendly I am. And I know. I really am. I'm like, why should I? You know, they're not my friends. They're just not my friends. And when they're beating up on us, it has nothing to do with me by doing normal criticism. I did not. One of the things I went out of my way to do was I wasn't snarky, although I could say snarky things. But it was like, this is what I think it is. And for some reason, it hurt them personally. Mm. And there was a really good scene in this book where I do this, where I know the Google guys really well. My ex-wife worked there, but it was not until much later. I covered them for a long time before she worked there, by the way. She ran Planet Out. And they were trying to buy Yahoo or get control of Yahoo. And at the time, that would have given them more than 90% of the market, which I'm like, I'm sorry, that's called a monopoly in most people's parlance. And so I wrote a series of really tough articles. Like, let me tell you, I covered the Microsoft trial, and this is worse. Search was so important and was decimating advertising. And I was like, you can't have 94% and think it's good. Mm-hmm. And their attitude was like, we're good, and we're going to make it better for everyone, even though we control it. We're the nice Borg. And I'm like, there's no such thing as a nice Borg. I'm sorry. And, you know, we have bouncy balls and primary colors. We're not going to hurt you. And I'm like, you ever heard of To Serve Man, that Twilight Zone thing? It's a cookbook.
Exactly.
It's a cookbook.
It's a cookbook.
You're not here to help us. You're here to eat us. I get it, like the kind of thing. And I kept saying to them, it's a cookbook.
Yes.
And so they called me when I wrote this piece where I said, I wrote a piece about this saying that the government cannot allow this. I was quite vehement, and I was aimed at government regulators, and they were very hurt. They were very hurt. Mm. And because the line I had was, at least Microsoft knew they were thugs. And is that hard? They were thugs. That's what they were doing. They were thuggish in their corporate behavior. Yeah. And they called me and they're like, that really hurt my feelings. And I was like, oh, come on, grow a set or something. And I was like, why did it hurt your feelings? And they're like, well, you know us. You know we're nice. This is the conversation. You know we're nice. It wasn't very nice. And we're not thugs. And, you know, we're not evil, as you know. Don't be. You know, we're not evil. And I said, you know, I got to tell you something. I said, there's a poem by Yeats, which is, some rough beast is slouching towards Bethlehem waiting to be born. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what? A beast? And I was like, oh, forget it. Like,
they could Google
not
the answer.
Work. Yes, I was like, I'm not going to explain poetry to you, but it's a famous poem. You should look it up. You should Google it. And I was like, there is an element of evil coming, because it's such a powerful platform. And I'm not particularly worried about you, although you've seen so many of these people transform into really loathsome creatures. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about the evil people coming, because if this is this powerful, evil people are coming. They're going to use these tools to hurt people, and they're going to use it for domination. Authoritarians are going to love it. I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about someone else who has 97% of the market and enormous wealth and power. I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about the evil people. And they just were like, what evil people? I'm like, do you know history? Do you understand? like every single technology tool gets turned into a weapon. It does, and if not first. Mm-hmm. And the key quote in this book is the Paul Virilio quote, which is, when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck. And my only question for all these people, and they found it offensive, was, I would like a lighthouse, if you don't mind, because you're killing us. Mm-hmm. Like, what's wrong with a lighthouse? Well, a lighthouse gets in the way of our innovation. I was like, but shipwreck. Like, and I like the ships, but I also hate the shipwrecks.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point, is mm-hmm. we want the ships, we want to be able to use them, but we mm-hmm. also want to avoid the shipwrecks.
But they don't care about the shipwrecks because it doesn't affect them. That is what I started to feel about a lot of people, is that they had a careless sense of the impact of things they did and of consequences, mm-hmm. which children do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Children don't care about consequences. Adults do. Mm-hmm. And adults take responsibility for consequences.
So, in part, I think that's a good part to another question I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, it's in part kind of a statement about the industry and the ways that we need to grow up mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. It's also in part a memoir.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And why did you decide on the memoir side?
I didn't want to do that, actually. I wanted just to say, here's some stories. Mm. See you later. but my editor, John Karp, who now runs Simon & Schuster, mm. in fact, now works for a private equity firm. He got bought up by it, which is astonishing what's happening in publishing, actually, from a business point of view. He was my original editor on the AOL books I wrote, which I think were groundbreaking. Like, that was the first time people were like, what is this internet thing? Mm. And that's what brought me here to Silicon Valley and to San Francisco. Mm. And he was very adamant that he wanted me to write, you know, I get approached, write the Yahoo story, write the Twitter story, right? And I was like, no, thank you. I've done my coverage. And he wanted originally for me to do a fictional book. And by the way, I was an advisor to Silicon Valley. I helped him come up with all those
that
stories.
That makes sense.
Conjoined Triangles of Success. That was
yes.
Dick Costolo,
yes.
actually.
Yes.
That was actually Dick Costolo's idea. Because he was also an advisor
yes.
to them. So he wanted to hire a fiction writer and have me write a fictional book about it and really lay the dirt, which I have a lot of it is not in here. Yeah. Like, I don't really go into people's personal lives, but I know everything about their personal lives. way far too much.
Yes, I was about to say, and the therapy bill is...
No, yeah, they do. Some people started telling me, I was like, I don't want to know about your personal proclivities, if you don't mind. And I thought, oh, that would be interesting. And I could kill someone, finally, like someone I don't like. I was like, there could be a murder mystery, and I could kill off the people I don't like, and they'd know who they were, but I wouldn't actually kill them. So, and then I was like, oh, I don't know, it doesn't... And I kept, like, pushing it off. And he said, it's got to be about you. And I said, who cares about me? And he was like, no, it's got to be your journey. You're like Nick in The Great Gatsby. Mm. And when he said that, that quote that starts the book in The Great Gatsby, mm. they were careless people, Tom and Daisy... Mm. That was like, oh, I'm Nick. That's exactly who I am. I've seen it, and I got to tell it. And then when Walt Mossberg did not write his memoir, which he had a deal to do so, he just decided not to do it, I said, someone has to say, right? Someone has to tell you from history sense. And we did it a lot through the Code Conference and All Things D conferences because we have, like, astonishing history. You've been on stage, a lot of people. Mm. We have an astonishing history of interviews of these people at their peak.
Yeah.
And so that was one way of doing it, but then it was like, this is what I think of them. This is what I thought. And I thought it worked.
Yeah. I thought both of you have done an amazing set of interviews. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the canonical one was the Gates Jobs one.
Yeah.
That was spectacular.
That was, wasn't it?
Right. I mean,
I know.
Like, being in the audience was like
I know.
Mesmerizing.
It was.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really like each other. That yes. They reconciled a little bit when Steve was dying.
Yes.
That's for sure. But yeah, they had a real competition. But Walt and I felt that these were the two iconic figures, right? Even though they weren't the internet people,
yes.
they were the iconic figures of tech. People looked up to them for various reasons. Gates for his business acumen, Steve for his inspirational design, just beauty of product, right? A real product thing. And inspiration, like really, what an inspirational set of... I mean, that guy had so many hits. It's crazy. And they were conjoined in so many ways that we felt they had to talk. And they had never done it, which was incredible. And we knew they were compelled like each other. They were like planets that went like this, right, essentially. And I always thought if they died on the same day, you know, sort of like the Adams and Jefferson, that Steve Jobs's obituary would say, the greatest visionary in technology died today. Gates, it would have been the world's richest man died, right? And he hated that.
Yes.
And so we always knew he wanted that encounter. And Steve was interested in it, too, because he understood his place in history very well. He was very, you know, speaking of well-read, well-educated, very thoughtful about things outside of tech. And so we wanted to bring them together and we'd talk about the high ideas of what they represented. unfortunately, Steve, as usual, tried to. He was always pantsing Gates constantly, yes. And it was indulgent on his part. But we did an interview. We each gave them slots, separate slots at the conference, and Gates sent Ballmer and Steve Ballmer, and Jobs always did it himself. Mm. Always spoke for the company, and so he gets on stage with Walt and. Walt asked him just one of these soft, very easy question. Why do you think iTunes is the most popular use of on Windows, one of the most popular third-party developers? And he said, and we had spent a lot of time getting them to do it, right? Mm. And it was very, they were never going to remove themselves from it, but we released the press release the minute they said yes, so they couldn't get out of it. And yes. I have all kinds of tricks up my sleeve. Yes. And Jobs looked at Walt and he goes, Walt, if you lived in hell and someone gave you ice water, you'd be happy too. And we were like, yeah. And this was hours before the interview. And you knew what he was doing.
Yes.
With Gates. Yeah. Fucking with him. Yes. And I was, and he then he smirked. And Steve had the best, he was like, you know, his little smirk. If you go look at it, he's got the best smirk of all time. And, you know, he was the cool kid, and Gates mm-hmm. wanted to be the cool kid. And so Gates shows up in the green room. He hears about it, of course. And the PR people were like, oh, my God. Like, we were all like, oh, geez. And I was backstage. I was like, oh, thank. Like, really? You couldn't just keep it to yourself, yes. like, that you're cooler than
or at least
Gates.
For one more day.
One more day. No, he couldn't. So Gates arrives in the, it was his stories in the book. He arrives in the green room. Very much monosyllabic. And you know he's already not the most loquacious person in the world. And he's a hard time interacting with people, right? And he, I hadn't seen him rock in years, and he started rocking again. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, you know, he was doing this. Anyway. And you're like, hi. And he's like, hello, like this. And you're like, oh, this is going to suck. And he sat there and just seething. He was seething because, once again, he'd been pantsed in front of Tech's Elite by Steve Jobs. Like, who is cooler? He just is. He's just, sorry, he's cooler. And he's not saying a word. And we're like, oh, this is going to be terrible. We wanted them to have a rapport because they did have one. And then Steve walks in, smirky as ever, just shitty and grin, like, look what I did to the nerd. I shoved him in this locker once again.
Yes.
I have won again. I am the prom king. And he walks in and he's all smiling. We're like, you buddy. And he sits down and we're trying to get them to talk. Like, we're going to do this. We want to keep it high level. We don't want to be about profits. We want to talk about big ideas. And Gates is rocking and not speaking. And Steve is just smirking. And we're like, you're exactly the characters we thought you were. And so at one point, Gates just wasn't responding at all. And we asked a question of them, and Gates goes, how would I know? I run hell. Like, and Steve, I can't believe this happened, but I swear, this was astonishing. Steve had a thing of ice water in his hand, like a bottle that was covered with condensation, just covered. And he hands it to Gates, and he goes, let me help you. And it was good. So it was so great. And then it was fine. And I tried to get a picture of them together. We had Kodak there yes. with one of their advanced digital cameras. And Gates wouldn't do it. And I finally was like, look at me. 100 years from now, this will be the classic picture of the two of you. You're going to be dead in 100 years. Take the picture. And he did. He did. Yes. He listened to me. And so we had this beautiful portrait of them yes. together. Then when we get on stage, I started off with a softball. And I said, what's something about your relationship people don't know? And I saw Jobs' little head go, light bulb go off, and he goes, you know, for many years now, we've been married. And we're deeply in love, or something like that. And I was like, oh, no, the gay joke. And Gates doesn't know what to do, because he's not quick on his feet, the way Jobs was. And he's like, what do I say? What do I say? I don't want to be anti-gay, and yet I'm not gay, you know? Like, going like this, like on and on. And he's like, what do I do? What do I do? Because I can't see being gay, but I don't want people to think I'm gay or whatever. And we're not gay, by the way. We're not. We've never had sex. You know, you can see it going on and on. And it was so funny. And all he does is go, like that. It's a great, go watch it. And Jobs, once again, smirks. But he ended on a beautiful note. You remember that last
yes, of
moment?
Course.
What a great, he gave a Beatles yeah. quote. That was great. It was yeah. a great interview. I should have quit right there.
I actually thought Gates should have reached out and taken Jobs' hand.
Oh, would he? And give him a kiss.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. Yeah. That yeah. was what I would have thought
yeah.
would have been
yeah,
the
big wet kiss. Yes. That would have been a great moment.
Yes, right.
No way. He wouldn't have done
it. No. But even just taking the hand would have been,
Should have, but he can't. He doesn't have that ability. He's not that fast.
but in terms of, like, the tech industry becoming more mature, not, you know, spinning, you know, hypocritical fictions, understanding their role and responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Gates's life is a great
100%.
Right.
Yes, 100%. One time backstage, his former wife, Melinda, was on stage, and she's really quite inspiring and has done all kinds of interesting things. I had met her when she was a product manager, actually, at Microsoft. She worked for Microsoft Bob, for the people who don't know that particular. I don't think she was Clippy, but she was Microsoft Bob. And I look up Clippy. It's really funny. Yeah.
And if you know what that is, you're of a certain generation.
Yes. we were backstage, and she was so great. And he and I had a very testy relationship, actually, for a long time. Not recently, but I looked at him. I don't know why. I say things come out of my mouth. I'm a little like Steve Jobs in that way. And I said, she's amazing. What she's saying is amazing. She was doing an interview with Walt. And I said, you know, I like you 10% better right now for being married to her.
Yes.
And he goes, well, and he knew Megan, my wife, and he goes, well, I like you 10% more because you're married to her. And I was like, okay, then. Like, this is it.
Yes.
But he has improved because he's focused. Gates, Prost, and I'm leaving Epstein stuff out of there, very bad judgment there. He is focused on climate change, vaccines. Mm-hmm. I think philanthropy, Bill, is a really different person, right, and has seen the bigger responsibility because he really was quite I'm not saying villainous, but a figure of great aggression and non-caring about stuff for a long, long time. And so he progressed. And I do think over history, he's going to be seen in that way, the stuff he's done around vaccines. And by the way, he's endured endless crazy shit around the vaccine stuff. You know, I can't go anywhere with something, you know, he's trying to put a chip in our brain. And I was like, oh, no, he's not.
Yeah. He literally got approached by a woman in Seattle who was like, you're putting chips in us with the vaccine.
Yes.
Like, what?
Yeah, he doesn't know. He was like, but the climate stuff he's doing, the investments are really interesting.
Yeah.
He's leading the way on some stuff that is really important, I think. Does it make up for his other behavior? I suppose, you know, in some people's lives aren't one part. It's the addition and subtraction. Yeah. He really was an aggressive, he sort of was the personification of aggression and monopolistic behavior for a long time.
Yeah, well, but that was one of the reasons I wanted to, actually, we got to it in a different path, but one of the reasons I want to ask a question, because some of this is the kind of young idealist's descent into bad behavior.
Yes, yeah.
Right, is one part of the memoir in the book. But there's also sometimes where you get to these people who their later phase is like, you know, a champion for the world. And that's part of how
not just the world, but as a better business person. Yeah. They don't have to they don't have to create vaccines. They don't have to do that. But that they progress. Like, look, Brian Chesky's a good example. Always a nice guy, by the way. Never not a nice guy. Mm. But, you know, they made some real mess ups at Airbnb. But he learned and he progressed and he admitted and he tried to fix it. And and again, there's all kinds of issues around Airbnb, although now we're not quite as incensed at Airbnb as we used to be. But there were issues that were clear about renters and things like that. And you at least saw an educational, a movement and an acknowledgement of the damage, and that you didn't see. Evan Spiegel's another person who really was a tech bro, like, oy, you know. And we had lunch once when he had written some unfortunate emails as a college student. And I never wrote about it because I was like, oh, he's a college, who cares? Like, he, you know, everybody's
that college student's a definition of young.
Right. Kid. I was like, oh, well, that was a really obnoxious email, but it's not, maybe it's on him. Maybe he's going to change. Maybe we have to be a little more, which I think people would be surprised. I didn't jump on it at all, that story. A lot of the press did. And we had lunch in Santa Monica, and he started yelling at me over the press. And I was like, I'm not the press. Like, there's no press. There's me, and there's other people, and I don't know what to say. And I said, I'm not going to put up with this about you wrote bad emails, and they're going to write about them. I'm sorry, you're famous now. Oh, well, you're also really rich. Too bad. And he was like, well, that's not fair. They shouldn't write about it. He goes, that was different me. And I said, Evan, that was 2 years ago. I'm going to tell you, if at 40 you can say this, right now you can't. It was, how have you progressed in 2 years? And by the way, he has progressed rather significantly, I would say, and has been aware of they had issues of too many men there, too many, like, he, you know, I appreciate his progression. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a low bar with a lot of people. I'm like, oh, you're actually not, you know, behaving. But there's a lot of people who you have to allow to progress. Yeah. And you have to not. It's a little like the political scene where someone like George Conway, for example, who I am friends with in Washington. Mm-hmm. And people are like, how can you be friends with him? And I'm like, you know what? At some point, we have to let them back. Like, we have to, like, you have to allow people to have changed and developed and be, well, they were there when this. I was like, they were. I don't know what to tell you, but if they're having a change of heart, this is at the heart of our country, which is like, you can redeem yourself. And so some people get mad at me, but I don't give a they're going to show signs of trying to do things. And it's not like, you know, Bill Gates is an example. I was really quite critical of the stuff that Microsoft did, but I'm going to be non-critical. And someone's like, you know what? At this point, Liz Cheney is someone I kind of am like, okay.
Yes.
Like, okay, I'll take it.
She's behaving heroically.
Yes, that's correct. But at the same time, by the way, her stuff on gay stuff, but I brought it up with her. Or her stuff, you know, the war stuff.
Oh, no, a bunch of terrible.
Yes, she loves a war. The lady loves a war. So, but so does Hillary Clinton in a lot of ways. The perfect is the enemy of the good, right?
Yes.
At some point in this country, we have to stop. Speaking of Yates, the noisy people are dominating us, the noisy, self-interested people. And there are a lot. That's why I spend a lot of time in interviews now interviewing people I don't agree with. Quite a few. Mike Gallagher, who I think is a really intelligent person, Ken Buck, all these people, a lot of them are political, that I'm just going to engage with because I feel like we've got to come to a common solutions, or else the contrarians, for contrarian's sake, are going to dominate and destroy all of us in a lot of ways. And a lot of them come from tech, this industrial grievance complex of rich people who are victims. I don't know if you know, but it's very hard to be a billionaire and not have everybody love you.
Yes.
You know?
Well, that's the Crimea River, which I totally agree with. Like, you do not have it hard. It's fine.
Yes, they don't.
Right. Yeah. Now, one of the things I thought you did that was genius is you actually use some of their tweets and other criticisms, and use that as the book blurbs.
Yes, praise for Kara Swisher.
Yes, exactly. Do you think that these folks, you know, in that hope of coming back, might get back to good discourse?
Versus... Some of them were bad to begin with, and several people on the back of that book were. I don't. I think either through egomaniacal things or... Mm. No, some of them are lost causes, absolutely lost causes. I would put Elon among them. Mm. And they literally just want to watch the world burn. That's what I feel like. They're angry and disaffected and have means and money to make so much damage happen. Mm. And that's what they're doing. But some of them, sure. The reason I did that is I hate blurbs. I hate asking people for favors. And they insult me all the time online. I thought, I'm going to use it for marketing. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Why not?
Genius.
Why not? If they want to call a lady a... I'm going to use it for marketing. That's fine. Milan, her heart is seething with hate. I'm like, first of all, what bad writing?
Yes.
Why not?
Yes.
Good. I want the haters to buy this just as much. I don't care.
Yes, exactly.
$25 is $25.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and, you know, they should. Before these are, by the way, some good questions. What would you want the people in the tech industry to take away from reading your book?
I think one of the themes of the book is lack of accountability. Like that there are no guardrails. That guardrails do not mean lack of innovation. That's the trope you get. Like if you fence us in, we shall never be able to create this fine digital dry cleaning service. I was like, yes, you will. Every industry in the world has some. Regulation isn't perfect. I agree. There's all kinds of messes. But honestly, none, like none. Are you kidding me? You're the richest people in the world. You have no constrict anywhere. Secondly, you're welcome for the internet, you people. It's paid for by the American taxpayer. You're welcome for the data. You're welcome for this. Why do you get all the advantages from it? And then tell us how great you are. You're not magicians. You're people. You know, you're not no better than the people who created roads. You're no better than the people who created buildings. Mm. Stop pretending you are gods. Like that is, and you have a responsibility with this great power comes great responsibility, which, you know, they're like Spider-Man. I'm like, no, it's actually goes back, but I'm not going to help you with that.
You tweeted to me.
Yes.
I said Spider-Man. I was like, you said it's Voltaire. I was like, well, people know Spider-Man. That was the point.
I understand. Yeah, I get it. Right. I think you probably did know it.
Yes, I did.
Yes, of course, because you are well-educated and roundly educated, which is why I appreciate you. But one of the things, you do have great responsibility, and you cannot be careless. And I think it's exemplified by that. The one interview I think that was most important was my interview with Mark, not the sweating one, which was unfortunate, but the one later about anti-Semitism where he insists, the Holocaust deniers one. And where he did not understand the implications of allowing anti-Semitic toxic waste to flow over Facebook for as long as it did. And then he stopped it years later, right? He didn't understand that and didn't care to understand. And I think one of the things right now, which was a moment I was hoping for a better outcome, was when he went to Congress and they... Josh Hawley or Tom Cotton, whatever, they're both terrible people. Yes. And I mushed them up into one really loathsome character. Yes. And two smart people, by the way, which is
very
worse.
Smart and
even worse.
Very evil.
They're not like they're dumb. It's not like it's Marjorie Taylor Greene wandering around. She is profoundly dumb, let me just tell you, profoundly. Yeah. But she has a feral sense. She's like, you know, that kind of thing. She is. She's like, you can see it. It's like, you know. But they made him get up and apologize, which I thought was performative bullshit. Like, honestly, if you want something to happen, pass a law. Guess what? You're Congress. Like, are you kidding me? You're yelling at this guy. He's not going to do it. He didn't do it before. You could. You have the power to do it, but you want to have a little scene so you can put it on Twitter or whatever and raise money. Like, screw you. Like, I blame them now at this point. So he gets up, and there's the parents with the pictures, which was, that was a real moment. It wasn't these parents whose kids got hurt because of social media stuff. And it's not the full story, but you should be able to sue Mark Zuckerberg for this and either win or lose in court, right? You can't. And so, and I don't mind them losing either. It's just they should be able to have avenues. And I had been struck because I'd interviewed one of the Sandy Hook parents, and Mark and I had a real back and forth about Alex Jones, who violated the rules over and over, and he did nothing about it. And the reason the father got to take down a lot of the dreck about it wasn't appealing to their better nature or anything else. It was because of copyright infringement, which is like sickening that a person who lost their kids has to fight to get really sickening stuff down. So these parents had these pictures, and Mark looked at them, and I know you don't believe this, but Mark is actually, he's a good father, he's a good, from what I can tell, he's not a loathsome character, he really, he's not a villain, he's just not, and that makes it harder for me. And so they put up these pictures, and I could see the person in him see those kids, and I saw him go, oh my God, like, oh my God, what did I do? Like, I saw it there for a second, but then he couldn't do it, he just couldn't get there, and what he said was, I'm sorry for what happened to you versus I'm sorry for what I did, for anything I did that hurt your children. This is devastating to me, and I know it's devastating to you, and let's talk together. He couldn't do it. He had to say, I'm sorry for what was done to you. And that is not an apology. That's like saying, I'm sorry it's raining today. Like, I had nothing to do with the rain. And that drove me nuts. And I thought, for a minute, I thought he would have a Gates jump, right? Yeah. Like, but he didn't.
Although
you can influence him, I'm sure.
Although after you, also you've been hauled through the public beating and circus of the Congress.
He took the job.
Yeah,
he took the job.
I understand. But
he gets the money. Yeah. He gets the money. He took the job. He shouldn't have created that if he didn't want the responsibility. It happened to Jerry Yang, too, many years before on China. And this is, you know, this is the job. And he if he doesn't want it, then he should not have full... He should be able to be fired then, and he should leave or whatever if he doesn't want to do the harder decisions. I get Congress is a ridiculous thing, but they are elected officials, and this is, you know, even if they're acting like children.
We can talk about Congress.
Yeah.
So before we go to...
By the way, thank you for the E. Jean Carroll money. That was nice of you.
Well,
money well spent.
Yes.
You paid for...
On lots. Look...
But again, by the way, Trump can be hauled in court.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Why can't everybody? Like, I don't know.
I think this election is about upholding the rule of law. I think it's extremely important. I think Biden is the candidate who's pro-rule of law, and Trump is the one who is opposed. And so do it. Before we go to these questions, and you know, some others depending, current news is... Elon Musk suing OpenAI.
Everybody.
Yes, well, everybody. Right? It seems that...
His childhood traumas get played out every day for
has
us.
It, has it met a lawyer he doesn't like?
What?
Any commentary from Carol Ann?
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to hear what you think. But I think it's a ridiculous nonsense lawsuit born of the fact that he's not the cool kid anymore. And he was there and he made a power play. It's all about power. Listen, let me tell you, Elon Musk was the first person to talk about advanced AI with me and about the risks, by the way. He was the first person. I think you're the second. Like, both of you were very early to this. And I think he he overplayed his hand, as he often does, at what he did at Twitter when he tried to get out of that deal. And he's mad. And so he's using legal means to take out his mistake, his own mistake. And if you're a contract lawyer, I've talked to dozens of them about this because I want to make sure this is nonsense. There's no contract. There's no nothing. He made a power play. He lost. He walked away. Oh, I'm mad. You called someone a jackass and walked out of there. He loves to do that bullshit. Because he's a child, and he lost, and he can't stand it. He can't stand. And they, as Scott Galloway said, I think he's right. He was part of a team, and then he tried to take over the team, which is very clear. And he left. He stalked out because he was real mad. And then they went on to win the World Series. And he's like, that was me. Like, yes, it was at the beginning, but he left.
Yes.
You know, and then he's like, I'm taking away your money. And guess who stepped in? This guy, right? Like, he wouldn't pay their rent. What kind of asshole does that, right? Yep. What a petty asshole. And so, you know, he tried to have control. He's not cool now. And so he's deeply, profoundly jealous because, you know, Grok, okay, sure, good luck. He's on a level playing field. And he doesn't like level playing fields at all.
And the particular thing that I thought those emails reflected was his whole point was, I don't think this will succeed as a nonprofit. I think it should be a company that I own and control. And now you're not doing the nonprofit thing, and you're working with a company.
It's nonsense. Yes. Elon Musk doesn't care about anyone but himself. I'm sorry. He's the most self-absorbed person in need of therapy that I've ever seen. I mean, he's not going to get it because that would require self-reflection, and he doesn't have it. I mean, it's a miracle he can see himself in a mirror.
So. did you write a review of Walt's book, Isaacson?
I had a very big to-do with it. Okay. If you want to listen to a podcast that's very spicy, listen to it.
Yes.
I thought it was a tongue bath, and I thought it was full of errors, actually. And I think, you know, including what I thought was the drug use, it was not in there. I told him about it. Everyone knew about it. Yeah. And I thought the Journal did a really good, solid, well-reported story. And it doesn't mean it's everything, but you have to acknowledge it. And the more important story in the Journal was not the I like ketamine. I like to give it to myself. I'm like, look, people, this is San Francisco. Do what you want. But don't pretend that this board is in any way governing this company. And when the Journal showed the money these people were, wasn't that astonishing to you? That money these board members are making, it was capitalism after all, right? Yes. He gets to do what he wants. They're being paid off, essentially. And so, you know, it's one of the elements you have to put in there. And so I thought that book was just very much, I like Walter. He's a friend of mine.
Yes.
But I brought up with him publicly that I thought he missed, you know, this whole demons thing and the idea that he has demons, Kara. I'm like, I don't care. I have demons. I had a shitty stepfather. Guess what? My father died.
Yeah.
Am I going around and being anti-Semitic and being anti-gay and anti-trans? And by the way, he has a trans kid. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, I don't do that. And I'm sorry. Every day it's one more. The immigration thing this week was loathsome. Loathsome. How dare he do that and make up shit? Like, and thank God for Mark Cuban, another evolving character.
Yes. Yes.
Boy, was he a bro. Do you remember him with the bro days? He was bro. And now, not because I agree with him, because we don't often.
Yes.
He and I argue about the wealth tax all the time. But he laid out the DEI. Mark Cuban, if you go and look at what he did, he got on Twitter and started laying out why DEI was important to his companies. And he talked about his experience. Here's why I like it. You don't have to. This was our experience. I was wrong here. I did this. It was not virtue signaling in any way. It was a very good primer about how he changed. I thought it was great. And when he was doing it, I texted him. I'm like, Godspeed. What are you doing? They're going to come after you. And they did. And instead of having a discussion about DEI, which we absolutely should, by the way, diversity, the opposite, homogeneity, that's not good. Secondly, inclusion. Oh, exclusion is so much better.
Yes.
Let's exclude people.
Yes.
That's a nice way to conduct a country.
Yes.
And then equity. Oh, no, unfairness.
Yes.
Don't you believe in unfairness? Because I do.
Yes.
You know, the whole thing is ridiculous. Same thing with woke. The opposite of woke is asleep.
Yes, exactly.
We need to stop.
Which is the reason why they keep saying anti-woke. It's like, well, that's asleep.
You're asleep, you stupid. Anyway. And the response from Elon on this thing, a thoughtful thing was, you're a moron. Like, what? Like, come on. You're not a serious, if you don't want to be a serious person, get off the stage. And if you want to, you want to really, but he can't because he's an attention sponge. He needs it to survive. Like, so he does whatever antics he can do. And the same thing with, now it's a disease of a lot of these people. And, you know, like Bill Ackman, like with his, what does he know? He's a rich guy who gave to Harvard and was mad. Now he's an expert on DEI. I don't think so. And I was joking to read backstage, I'm going to do a 90-part series on hedge fund investing, of which I know nothing. Like, because I can't. Yes. Why not? Kara Swisher, I feel I should be able to pontificate on these topics. Yes. Like, whatever. You have a really nice-looking wife who's super smart. Like, enjoy your children. Yeah. Like, stop it.
Neri is spectacular.
What? Yes.
Neri Oxman.
Absolutely.
So now back to serious questions.
Yes, okay.
And I'll ask the specific one from the audience, but then also broaden a little bit. The specific is, where is the line in journalism between news reporting and editorial advocacy? But also wither journalism.
Wither.
Right? Yes.
Ah, the wither question.
Yes.
I think I've already gone down this road. One of the reasons, I was a beat reporter, so you really couldn't. You're like, this happened to Reed. He invested in LinkedIn, whatever, news stories, right? Mm. We did a million of those. And that's just news. And that's the way it was. That's what you did. When I left and did All Things D with Wald, we decided to change rather significantly. Where it wasn't advocacy. We did the reporting. And this is our conclusion. And I thought that was more valuable to audiences. It's not advocacy, I don't think. Walt is the perfect example of this. I tested everything, and now I'm telling you, I like this or I don't like this, or it's going to work or it's not going to work. And so what we did at All Things D was get rid of at the Wall Street Journal, whenever I would do like reporting on, say, Webvan. And by the time I looked at it, I was like, this is a disaster because I can do math and the things aren't in place. Not to say the idea wasn't good, but it's not going to work. And so I would write a story. I'd say, this isn't going to work. And my editors would be like, can you get someone else to say that? And I was like, but I'm saying it. I'm saying it from my reporting. And so one of the things, I don't consider it advocacy. I'm telling you, I looked into it, and this is, and either I'm right or wrong, but I did the reporting, and I don't think this is going to work. And I think a really good example of this, tell me if this is advocacy. I wrote a column in the New York Times, and I said, if Trump loses the election, and this was about his use of Twitter and everything else, because I thought he's become too dangerous. I said, if he loses the election, what he's going to do is he's going to go on and on about that it was stolen, that there were lies, that it was stolen, it was stealing, that there was fake this, fake that. I said, it's going to go up and down the right-wing echo chamber. And then after several weeks, he's going to try to stop it. It's going to jump into the real world, and he's going to ask his followers, who he's now radicalized, to do something about it. Mm-hmm. I wrote that in 2019, mm-hmm. October, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
At the time I wrote it, and I said, the Facebook, Twitter people are handmaidens to sedition. This is what's going to happen, mm-hmm. right, essentially. Mm-hmm. And they called me. They're like, how could you advocate and say something like that? How could you do that? I said, I'm just guessing what's happening based on what's happened before and the power of this guy online. I'm not advocating. I'm telling you what's going to happen because I did the reporting, and I feel like this is what the natural... My best guess as to what's going to happen is this. And, you know, I was right. And so I don't think it's advocacy. And as to journalism, I think what we did at All Things D was pioneering in terms of doing that, giving people, like, here's what we think. We had the longest disclosure statements. You know, here's who we are. My wife worked for Google. By the way, I never got any stock in it. We had separate money and stuff like that. And or Peter Kafka, this is what I did. This is where I came from. Walt. We had long disclosures because we believe in our audience. We think they are smart enough to decide if we're in the can or not, right? That's one. The other is radical candor with them. It's like, you don't have to agree with us, but we think this is the way it's going to go. We're either right or we're wrong, and we'll know in the end. But we felt that you added great reporting or live journalism like we did on stage at Code. And we had just a different thing. We respected our audience. And I think a lot of media didn't do that. The second thing is media didn't change their economics at all. Mm-hmm. Like, they saw it coming. And I, even back in the 90s, I was like, classifieds are fucked. Like, hey, over here, Craigslist. You might want to look. Yeah. Same thing with display advertising. Same things with the subscription. They saw it coming, and they never got the technical chops necessary. And then they trusted that tech companies didn't want to get into media, and tech companies wanted to get into media. They wanted to get into advertising. And they just let it go. And I think it's a very simple thing to me, because I've created, every business I've created is very profitable, by the way. And so I have created businesses so they're profitable. So when someone comes to me, I happen to own them now, so I don't really, no one comes to me. But when they did at the Wall Street Journal and they're like, Karen, I'm like, go away. Didn't you get the $1 million I sent you last week? Get the hell away from me. Like, move along. So they couldn't argue with me. So you have to match your costs and your revenues, and the stuff you're making has to be valuable to the audience. It has to be a product that's, and I hate to use the word product, but that's what it is. It's called the news business. It's show business. This isn't a romantic thing. If you want to stay in business, you've got to reconcile that. And if you don't, you're screwed. You really, truly are. You are. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you this next question in part because I think it's has an entertaining, reflective element. Since personally, my co-founding inflection with Mustafa, investing in AI, Series A in Aurora and autonomous vehicles.
So that's like, this car.
The car stuff that I've been doing. So I will read the question verbatim because it has that entertaining reflective remark. The tech industry's focus on AI, autonomous vehicles, and space exploration seems like fiddling while Rome, a.k.a. the Earth, burns. What, if anything, could focus our best and brightest and resources to solving the climate crisis before it's too late?
You know, I don't think that's actually true. I think there's a lot of investment being made in climate tech. And by the way, speaking of diverse, it's a much more diverse set of entrepreneurs and really mission-based, really, truly mission-based. Look, I don't care if they become trillionaires. I wrote a column a couple of years ago in the Times where I said the world's first trillionaire is going to be a climate change tech person. I just made it up. But I did it because I wanted to inspire them. This could possibly make money, which is, I am only doing it because, look, money. Like, go do this. Money is over here. And it's also, we're going to die if you don't, like, kind of thing. So it's existential. I believe climate changes are absolute existential. And I think tech is not going to solve everything, but we need to bring to bear our greatest minds on this problem. It is the most important issue. Yeah. You know, Oppenheimer's about to win. That was the big thing where all the great minds went to. We need to bring our greatest minds, including government. There has to be government, private sector, everything else. Space exploration, we do have to think about a multi-planetary civilization. We cannot pretend this Earth is, look, inevitable. Even if it wasn't a climate crisis, every planet dies. They just do. That seems to be the thing. So if we want to continue, well, maybe we just go. That could be another thing. Like, okay, that's the end of that. But
that's a terrible idea.
I'm sorry to tell you, but the sun's going to explode someday. It is. It just is.
That's enough years out. That's definitely far enough in the future that
maybe
we can worry about
later.
I don't
know. But here's the deal.
Physics.
But yes, okay, thank you. Multi-planetary species, I think, is important. Yeah. I don't love that it's now so privatized. I think there's dangers in that, that it's Elon and Jeff Bezos essentially are doing it, and then the Chinese and Russians. So I do think that our government abrogated is responsibly pulling away, and that's because of pressure, political pressures of investing. We should be investing in that. We really should. And thinking about what that does that mean? Who owns it? We don't want to get total recall where some guy owns Mars, right? Which is where we're headed, aren't we? If you saw it, it's a great movie. Do the Schwarzenegger version. It was such a
good the Schwarzenegger
movie.
Version.
And John Lithgow is the owner of Mars, right? Yes. I think that's important. EVs, I do think EVs are important. Let me tell you who's the problem in this thing. People driving should not be driving. It's inefficient. It's energy.
They get drunk. They get everything.
It doesn't matter. One of the things when I know there's complaints from the fire department stuff about autonomous vehicles, and I called them. I'm like, how many people get in the way of your trucks? They're like, and I go, how many cars? And they said 3. And I said, how many people? They said 4,000. And I was like, okay, so let's try to like think about it. So I agree with you. It's not ready for prime time. There's too much beta testing by tech companies on every product, and I get the pushback, but people should not be driving cars. There should be autonomous vehicles, and electric vehicles are one of the ways we can do that. It's among many. Fast clothing is another one. You'd be surprised what actually eats up the environments. Methane is another thing. I know it sounds dumb, but there's all this cool stuff being invested in how to make cows not produce methane. Like, that's really important. Yeah. Some of the healthcare stuff is astonishing that's happening. Right now, there's a podcast with me and Reed Jobs, which is Steve Jobs' son. He's doing a thing called Yosemite with Jennifer Doudna, all these amazing cancer stuff in terms of making cancer non-lethal going forward. I mean, there is a lot of stuff happening. It's just that what's happened is we're all staring at Elon like we're staring at Trump. They're both dangerous people, by the way, as far as I'm concerned. And important to watch, by the way. They're not clowns by any, although they are clowns. They're making us look at them because they're addictive in that regard. And we can't get out of our rage against them, and we should have rage. But it's, what are we going to do with the rage? And so there is all this really cool stuff happening.
The other thing I would add is actually, in fact, a bunch of tech people are doing stuff on the climate change. I mean, this harkens back to the second chapter on the Gates story, which is Breakthrough Energy Ventures, and a bunch of nuclear fusion and other kinds of investments.
Yeah, the fusion stuff is really interesting. There's all kinds. And let's put a lighthouse in. And we can't, you literally, I'm sorry, again, be an adult. There's going to be problems. Look, but we have to mitigate and focus on safety and data protection and privacy. The fact that we don't have a national privacy bill is shameful in this country. And all kinds of bills. Like Amy Klobuchar texts me every day. She's like, once again, they took away the money I raised for antitrust fees that she passed. That's her only thing she could get passed. And they've taken the money from the Justice Department. And I was like, this is the way it goes. If we don't invest in that kind of stuff for safety, we're going to degenerate into a decision-making process where billionaires get to make our decisions. And some of them are good, some of them are bad, but it's not a world I want to live in, for sure.
So I'm going to paraphrase this question about which tech pioneers did you decide not to write about or hit the cutting room floor?
Who did I leave out?
And like, what was the decision to put in versus leave out?
Sometimes I just forgot about people. Like, I covered, it's 30 years now, and I went through some of my stories, and I'm like, I don't even remember writing them. Like, I was like, did I write that? That was good. Interestingly enough, the person who helped me was Nell Scovell, who helped Cheryl write her book, Lean In. I think Nell is wonderful. I just was like, what struck me? What did I remember? And what resonated with me? I wrote tons about Yahoo. It's not in here. I didn't think it was important anymore, right? It was a thing of the past. I've written books about AOL. I didn't want to repeat that stuff. I obviously think it's important. But I wanted to stick with the people who resonated most with me. Not that I covered the most, because some people I covered a lot. Other things, I just forgot them. I just forgot them. And nothing was in the cutting room floor. I did not put personal stuff that I thought was damaging. I just didn't. It wasn't my business. It's not my business how people want to conduct their personal.
So you're trying to improve how the industry impacts humanity.
The
and
business.
Society.
I stuck to the business. Yeah. I'm trying to think what I left out. Nothing was cutting room floor. It's what I spent a lot of time talking to Nell, figuring out what I remembered. And then we shaped it around the themes. And the themes are about everything that can be digitized will be digitized, the lack of safety, lack of accountability, consequences, and where we need to go and sort of get back. And I'm not saying to a centrist place, but to a sane place. The deleterious effect of wealth on many people. That was something that, it hasn't affected you. You're the same person. But people are often the same people they are when they get wealthy. It's just their worst characteristics tend to come out.
Roger McNamee wrote Zucked. I actually disagreed with that book intensely. What did you think?
Roger has a point of view. I appreciate his point of view. I think he was sort of all in on the tech. Talk about someone who was not just a cheerleader. He just really believed. That's a guy who really believed in the positive effects of tech. He really did. And he's very enthusiastic. So we had an interview where they created the Pre. Remember the Pre? And he put it out in front of me. This was the worst moment for him. But he puts it out, the Pre, which was one of the early phones. And he goes, look, it has a mirror on the back for the ladies. And I literally was like, and I said, did you just say that to Kara Swisher? I said, I thought you were smart. And then I ripped into him. I was like, who's the most vain people on earth? Not the ladies. And I see why he did it. I think he some people, when they get the religion and realize the damage, I think you may not have liked it, but he's turned out rather right on a number of issues, including self-esteem of girls, including damage, include. So I think directionally he's absolutely correct. He felt bad because he was part of it. And so you often get that emotion. And so I think directionally he's 100% correct. And the things, the dangers he was talking about really did come true. So in that way, I would disagree with you on that book. But I do think he, a convert is the most intense of all people. Convert, people who have shifted.
The thing in the discourse that I think is underappreciated about you that I really actually think is important is to actually be somewhat more nuanced, because Roger wasn't that close to it. Right.
Right.
I mean, and so a little bit of the, oh, look, I was really close to it. I was the one who did this damage. And it's like, well, actually, in fact, you weren't that close to it.
Right. I get it. But that's like inside baseball of Silicon Valley. Oh, he wasn't as important as he wasn't in the room.
Well, but it's a little bit of like, I'm trying to still be important by saying, oh, look at how bad and evil it is.
Yes.
It's like, look, it's
imagine tech people narcissism. I can't believe it. Everybody's narcissistic.
Yes.
Everybody's, no, actually, I'm an egomaniac. That's different. Everybody is. Everybody feels like they were the ones. But, you know, as a reporter, you'd go into a story and everyone was responsible. Even the stuff Walt and I created, there's a joke in the book where at Dow Jones, it literally was just Walt and I. Let me just be clear. And they also spent zero money because we made money from the get-go. I think they gave us the deposit for the hotel and then we paid them back a day later, essentially. So no money was spent by Dow Jones. But we had so many people go, I am the father of D or whatever. And I was like, you're the distant cousin we don't invite to Thanksgiving. That's who you are. But that happens all the time. Yes. I was there. Yes. I was like, you had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like, sure, yeah, you were there. You weren't, you know.
Well, success has
many
parents.
Many
and
parents.
Failure
That's
suddenly
correct.
Is an orphan.
That's correct. That's why I try not to fail.
Yeah. We only have 2 minutes left.
Right. Okay.
But the du jour topic of AI and tech industry, Kara. What would you have to say about AI?
I think you have to, again, nuanced, right? This is really where it is. You're either with us or against us. This is going to solve everything. I'm like, so far, it hasn't solved everything. I never believe anybody. So the techno-optimist school is really exhausting. I find them exhausting and because it's not going to fix everything. The techno-decelerationists can be just as problematic. Like I had one person call me saying, if I didn't stop Sam Altman, all humanity was going to die. And I was like... You want me to attack another gay person? No. I literally was like, that's Terminator. That's the plot of Terminator. And I'm not Linda Evans, and I do not have a giant gun. So
you're also not Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right. I was like, he's not. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. It's just not true. There's all kinds of good things. And so I think the reason I think this book is because right now we are at a cusp. And so I'm trying to get people, like, pay attention because it can go a good way. Like the Star Trek version of the universe, like I talked about, it can go a good way if we put things in place. Mistakes will be made along the road. But there is so much promise here, especially around cancer, around healthcare, and all kinds of things that you can just see. You can just see them. At the same time, I can see the problems like drones, control, autocrats. It's all there, and it's all there for them. And so I prefer people like you. I prefer people like Fei-Fei Li, like who are not, they're not screaming at me from either side here. And it's just not true over here. And you people, you techno-optimists, needs to be quiet because of all the damage you've done. Let's have some other people involved in the discussion. Tech people are remarkable, but so were the people who created lots of stuff. Hollywood, whatever. Name your industry. Name your wonderful thing for humanity. And by the way, the real amazing people are the scientists who create all kinds of vaccines. That's the real. Come on, stop it. Like, they're not magicians. They're regular people with huge amounts of flaws. And that's what I was trying to put. These are, do not worship these people. They're false idols. And at the same time, don't hate them. They're also, some of them are trying. Some of them are just bad people. Some of them are good people. And have a little more presence of mind to understand the difference kind of stuff. And so that's what I was trying to do, pretty much.
So let's give a hand to the amazing Kara Swisher.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you like what you've heard, please consider supporting our work. Help us bring 500 programs a year to listeners like you. Go to commonwealthclub.org/donate. Think your way around the world with our travel program to exciting domestic and international destinations. When you're in the Bay Area, please join us for live events at our home on the waterfront. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.